Good morning. I'm Barbara Cutts, and I'm Worship Associate this morning. And the opening words, which I will read, were written by someone we all know, Reverend Jason. Life is mystery. The next chapter is always unwritten. No matter how certain we are of how the story will unfold, we will be surprised. Life is mystery. We are co-creators of each moment. Each of us a single note in a symphony, just waiting to unfold. Life is mystery. Our questions are perhaps more important than our answers. And with every moment, there is the chance of renewal. This morning, we are deconstructing our usual worship service and bringing you a service created moment by moment. Our pianist will be creating original compositions on the spot. Our minister's words will not be scripted or planned in advance. And you will have an opportunity to write down questions for Reverend Jason to answer during our usual sermon slot. This morning's service is an opportunity to recognize that we are all co-creators of our time together, of this community of which we are a part, and the target and the larger world around us. Let us proceed into our time of spontaneous worship with curiosity, questioning, and gratitude for the possibility each moment brings.
As always with this spot, I don't actually prepare what I'm going to say. Some of you may not know that since I'm standing up here, but with the pulpit hiding what I'm reading or not reading. But this will be a moment of acknowledging this very presence that we are all together. Let us recognize that life, as much as we may try and plan it, is always a mystery. What will unfold around the next corner remains to be found, to be seen, to be discovered. Sometimes we are taken aback by that which we find. It challenges us. It takes us to places we didn't necessarily want to go. It moves us into spaces of being uncomfortable or uncertain. And yet, even in those times, we can find our way through. And when we do, the richness of life is often so much more noticeable than it was before. It is our curiosity as human beings that helps us to survive, to always wait for that next chapter, not to be read, but to be written. Written in the spirit of hope, written in the spirit of possibility, and when we are connected to others in deep relationship, written in the spirit of love. Let us be mindful in our time together that we are co-creators of life. Minute by minute, it offers change and possibility beyond even our possible dreams and recognition. Minute by minute, we are offered the chance for renewal. And in the spirit of wonder and curiosity, I invite you during this time of reflection, if you would like, to come forward. We have note cards on this table and note cards over here and pencils. And you are welcome to ask a question that I will answer if I can get to it. I don't know how many questions there will be. But this is the thing about not knowing what the future holds, right? But to ask any question that you might want me to try and answer from this pulpit today, it can be about my ministry, my pathway here, our mission as a church. I don't know. The sky's really the limit. So this is the time for you to consider what your question would be, and leave it up here if you so choose. And that is my invitation. Also, if anyone has mobility issues or is kind of stuck in the center, please just raise your hand and someone will bring you a pencil and a note card if you would like. So we have a reading next, and I don't know who's going to do it.
I feel a bit like I'm being called to the Torah. Sometimes if you move carefully through the forest, breathing like the ones in the old stories who could cross a shimmering bed of dry leaves without a sound.
You come to a place whose only task is to trouble you with tiny but frightening requests, conceived out of nowhere, but in this place, beginning to lead everywhere.
Request to stop what you are doing right now and to stop what you are becoming while you do it. Question that can make or unmake a life. Question that have patiently waited for you. Question that have no right to go away.
And so let us begin our time of questions that have patiently waited for you. Questions that have no right to go away. So the first question, do you believe shame is useful? A recent study showed it did more harm than good to the shamed person. I think shame is a problematic concept for us, especially as Unitarian Universalists. We don't like the idea of shaming someone, and yet, at the same time, we've seen that studies have shown that especially large cultural groups are often moved toward progressive change because of acting against a sense of shame. There's a book called The Honor Code, I believe, and it details the cultural evolution in multiple countries of foot binding, things like that, and it was actually the sense of feeling shamed by other cultures that made those cultures shift. Slavery was another thing in the United States. And so shame on the micro level, person to person, I think can be incredibly problematic because there's a sense of who am I to shame you? But we have seen that that sense of feeling shamed or dishonored is effective in the larger culture. So I think it's a very different way of thinking, though, than the traditional liberal faith movement. What is your favorite meal? Just to switch gears, right? There's a little restaurant in San Juan Capistrano that serves chicken Wellington with scalloped potatoes, vegetables, delicious salad, and bread pudding for dessert. That's my favorite meal. It's a small town, easy to find. Describe your, and that's underlined, they don't want me to slither out of this, understanding of God. I think the best way I could describe that is that my understanding of God is ongoing. Much like what we're doing in this service with this idea of co-creation, I have moved through many different understandings of God, including a complete rejection of the idea and concepts associated with God. Personally, at this point, it's not a concept that I use or grasp onto for my own understanding of the world. It's not a way that I typically make meaning, but I am still in dialogue with that notion of God. And I think through my own theological studies, what I have discovered is that the different meanings people associate with God are much, much broader than what we typically get in just the basic kind of cultural exchange that we have around this idea of God. So the sense of God as simply reaching to be the best that we can be, a sense of transformation and possibility, a sense of community, of love, of relationships, all of those kind of abstractions, I certainly believe in and hold on to. I usually don't use the term God to describe that, but sometimes, depending upon the circumstances, it does make sense as a term. So there's a very you answer for you. It's open, it's evolving, but it's very kind of abstract and theoretical for me at this time. How are you? Someone asks. I'm doing well. It's been a good year. It has been a good year. You know, I think if I've done my job fairly well, it looks pretty easy a lot of the time. But it's hard. It's hard to come to a new community where you don't know the 125 plus people who were here when I got here. And we've added another 40, 50 people to our community since then. And it's a challenge to connect and know all of you in a way that feels meaningful for you and for me, and to feel like I'm balancing all of that, the pastoral care and the administrative stuff and the community engagement and the social justice and the dynamic Sunday services and so on. So it's a lot to hold, but I do it from a place of really believing in what and who we are as Unitarian Universalists. So most days I go to sleep feeling pretty good because I think, you know, I'm doing okay and I'm just one person. And I think that as long as we are, as a congregation, serving this larger faith movement, we are successful. So that's how I'm doing. How do you prepare for a loss, a death you know is coming? Years ago, I remember someone talking about death and saying, no matter what the circumstances, death comes unexpected. Death comes unexpected. I didn't get that at the time. I didn't really know what that meant. But I think having been through both personal losses in my own life and working in chaplaincy at St. Joseph Hospital, I recognize that we never really can prepare ourselves. The moment always somehow surprises us. And even if we feel great relief in that moment because we know there has been suffering along the way that we have not liked to see and witness, the grief nonetheless hits us very shortly thereafter. I think the most preparation we can do, really, is to be in relationship to others during that time, to talk about it, to reach out when we feel low. And hopefully, on top of all that, to have a trust in something beyond the situation we're facing at that moment. And again, to come back to the God notion, for some people that would be a trust in God. I think for me it's a trust simply that life unfolds as it will. It is unpredictable. It is both joyful and sorrowful. And all we can do is meet it from day to day. And someone else followed up with an easy question. Reverend Jason, what is the meaning of life? And then they wrote, just kidding. What do you see as the main mission of UUCF? The main mission of UUCF. I think our mission, is to offer transformation to me, to you, to help us to move toward being the best of who we can be. And I think part of that mission then means we don't stop at our walls, that we have to reach out beyond these walls, that we have to be engaged with our community. We have to be looking for opportunities to help others to be what they can be in the world. And we know there's a lot of things that hold people back from being those things, that their potential. And I think it's our job to help remove those barriers. So, main mission of UUCF, transformation within, transformation without. I know they didn't mean it like this, but the question is phrased, what brought you to this point of being a UU minister? It makes me think like, oh, why would you ever go there? You know, it's an interesting thing. I think most of my life I was looking for a way to utilize my particular skill set for something that had meaning. And I never quite found that thing that sort of summed it all up. You know, I was a writer, I was an artist, I was an actor, I did teaching, you know, I did all these things. But none of them, for me, sort of pulled it all together. And when I found Unitarian Universalism, and I can truly say it changed the way that I understood my life, at that point I felt very strongly called to ministry. But I waited for a couple of years before I told anybody. So other people were telling me by the time I finally admitted it. So when one has found faith and purpose here, how to address unsupportive family. You know, this is something that I think a lot of people face in our congregations, and I'm very aware of this, even in connecting with people on social media. I know that not everyone wants to be outed by being connected to our congregation, that for others in their family or in their circle of friends to see that they are part of who we are here can create a great deal of conflict. I think, you know, I wish I had an easy answer for this, but I think unsupportive family in general, really we can approach only from two ways. One, we have to decide whether those relationships are worth staying in. And sometimes we have people in our lives where we do decide that I know that the term toxic is used, it's not good for us on such a deep level that we must disconnect. But when we are trying to stay in relationship, I think we would do better offering opportunities for more listening and less explaining about who we are. I have found that more people come to me as a listener than they do to me as an evangelist. So there is a sense that our presence, who we are, how we listen, how we are willing to be curious, to ask questions where we actually aren't just trying to win the conversation. I think that's the best way to move through those experiences with family. And I will also say that family will trigger you until the day you die. That is just, I think it's in our, I have nothing to back this up, but I will say I think it's in our biological DNA to have families just be able to push all those little buttons inside of us. So remember, you know, you don't have to, just because that switch gets turned on, you don't actually have to light up in response. You can let go sometimes. Let's see. The question, what's wrong with a certain president? Seriously.
<You're>
I may have to do a part two. I think we need to think about the culture that we're part of. I think we need to think about the values that this culture has lifted up. I think we need to think about the place that we place a certain kind of authoritarian strength, the value that we've placed on that as a culture, and where we allow vulnerability to be on the public sphere. I think when we consider all of that, then we can understand how some people can step into a space that has been created for those who are looking for a certain kind of leader. And that's all I can really say about that from here. If you want a private conversation. How do we embrace change? This is in the lyrics to our song that Christine played this morning. Don't be afraid of some change. You know, I don't know that human beings are really afraid of change. You hear that all the time. We're scared of change. People are scared of change. I think what we're scared of is losing something along the way. So I think change is something that we can learn to appreciate and investigate and enjoy. But we need to feel secure that we're not going to lose the things that we're holding on to in the process. So that's my question whenever thinking about big change with this congregation or even in my own life. You know, what will we be afraid of losing if we go toward this change? And then we think about, is that something maybe we could lose? Or is there some way that we can keep a hold of that as we move through this change? But it's tough. The Pope recently said, rather be an atheist than be a Catholic who doesn't practice the teachings. How would you explain that being an atheist doesn't mean you are unethical and immoral? I think that's a question where, in a lot of ways, I'm probably preaching to the choir here, right? I think it can be tough, though, for people to understand, and we've seen this in our movement going all the way back. We saw the Universalists. The Universalists said, there's no hell. And people immediately said, well, then why would anybody do good? If there's no fear of punishment, why would you do good? And I think that's a very difficult concept for people to get over, the idea that you don't have to have an external punishment that you are frightened of in order to do good. In fact, having an internal driver toward goodness is actually a much stronger way of being good in the world. So I would talk with someone about, if they came to me and they said, you know, this person's an atheist and I don't feel like they can have morality, I think that's a time to have a conversation about what exactly, where is that coming from for them? Because it says much more about their belief system than it says anything about being an atheist. Because we know there are incredible atheists in this congregation and out in the world, and there are immoral, terrible atheists, just like there are theists that go across the spectrum. Says, after I've spoken to someone about my concern for our recent adopted covenant, and I still have concerns, what should I do? Well, I think the reason that is so important that this congregation have a covenant is because we are in relationship with one another. And I don't think there are very many things that we do in society anymore that call upon us to be in relationship in this same way. And that means it's challenging sometimes, and it's difficult. And with our covenant, we encourage people to directly communicate with one another when they have something that they are in conflict about or that's bothering them. If that conversation is unsuccessful, I am always happy to be a mediator between those people. But what we've discovered is what we call triangulation, which is talking to someone else rather than the person, sorry, I thought, who did that? Oh, me. Talking to someone else other than the person who we have the concern with is a recipe for disaster. And I know it can seem like the way to handle things is I have a problem with Randy to go talk to Mary about it, because Mary has got a sympathetic ear and so on, or vice versa. But the point is that that's a conversation to have directly with Mary or Randy or whoever that I have my concern with. And I am going to end on this question. What is the single most important issue in the world that needs to be solved? In 3 words or less. Listen, we are disconnected as a global community. Technically, we are more connected than we have ever been before. We have iPhones and internets and every possible way you can imagine to connect with one another, and yet we are more disconnected than ever. And we are disconnected because somewhere along the way we got the idea that individually we can pull on our bootstraps and make a life for ourselves, and that is what we are called to do as human beings. I don't believe that we are called to do that as human beings. I think that is a pathway that will lead to our ultimate destruction. I think we are called to recognize that the village that we have left behind, that concept, that model, that we are in these small communities that are connected to one another, that that is our future going forward. And we have to find a way to make meaning of that model in today's world with all the technology that we are dealing with all the global crises. So that disconnection, if you look at hunger, you look at disease, you look at poverty, you look at any war, any of our problems that we're facing, at the root is this idea that we are not actually in meaningful relationship with each other. It is that there are those people over there and these people over here, and the twain shall never meet. At the end of the day, I think the work we do as Unitarian Universalists is about strengthening those ties back to community. It starts within each of us making a commitment to our own spiritual wholeness, if you will, and then moving into a place where we are willing to reach out beyond our comfort zone, to look at the larger picture, to make decisions for our individual lives and for our community's life with that greater frame. This is very hard to do. This is not the avenue we have gone down globally for the most part. But I'm here because I believe we can do it. I'm here because I believe that as long as there is hope, as long as there are thinking people who will wrestle with these ideas and problems, that things can be better. And I think curiosity and questioning, like we've done this morning, and welcoming in the opportunity to co-create is where we begin. May it be so.